Chirodites, how you doing, everybody? My name's Jonathan. Jonathan Weir, that is. Decided to give you my full name this time. Happy Tuesday.
It's amazing that you played Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah.
There, Kevin, because I was just listening to that song earlier today.
That's a good song. And it has 150 million plays.
150 million plays. Good for them. Off of the album Bleed American, which I believe they had to change the name.
Yeah, that was a 9/11 change.
It was right after 9/11, which is, like, we view that now, 22 years later, is like, that was weird that, like, what difference did it make if it was called Bleed American? But we were just very sensitive to that kind of stuff back then.
It's called Bleed American now.
They either changed the name of the album or like the lead single. I believe In the Middle was actually called Bleed American.
The Naked Song.
Yeah. Speaking of risque stuff, I just want to hit a couple local topics before we get into the AI stuff. This was a big topic. I know Jack and Spike talked about it on the midday show yesterday, but there was a drag show in Arlington, and you can see the story on it on mynorthwest.com. The headline says, Arlington drag show goes awry, performer issues an apology. So this was an all-ages drag show on Mother's Day at the Arlington Bar Remix. That's R-E-M-Y-X apostrophe D. Which became the center of controversy after footage emerged of some performers using a pole, wearing stripper heels, and gyrating sexually. How else are you supposed to gyrate, really, when you think about it? Can you
non-sexual gyrating?
I'm trying to do it right now. I gotta say, I'm turning myself on. Can't do it non-sexually. They were gyrating sexually on the floor during several dance routines with children in attendance. Promotional flyers for the event described it as an all-ages show, but also featured $12 bottomless mimosas, which turns anything that's supposed to be an all-ages anything into this is adults only. So it was a big deal. They had Quintessa Touche, I believe is her name, on the show yesterday to talk about it. And I'm not going to defend what happened there, and she wasn't either. She was very contrite, or he actually, I'm not sure what gender they're going by, but they were very contrite about it, and they said, like, this was inappropriate, it was wrong, and we regret that happened. But it amazes me how drag shows have kind of become this epicenter of cultural debate and I don't know, rage, and it's become like this centerpiece of American debate and discussion, and I don't really get it because they've been around forever. They've existed forever, but for some reason just lately it seems like they're, oh my God, they're out of control. They're worse. I mean, there was a place when I was working in Kansas City 11 years ago, there was a place there, I'm assuming they still do it, a place called Hamburger Mary's. The whole place, women are in drag. They have drag shows every week. And it was like a thing. Like, everybody I knew just went to them for fun. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, it didn't matter what political ideology you subscribe to. You went to Hamburger Mary's because it was fun. It also amazes me that the same parts of this country that are hell-bent on banning drag shows and drag queen story hour and anything involving men dressing up as women because it's inappropriate for children to see that are the same parts of the country that are perfectly fine with something as grotesque to me as child beauty pageants. Do you not see the hypocrisy? Because I do. I see the hypocrisy there. Hey, we don't want our kids exposed to men dressed like hookers. That's disturbing. Also, this weekend, I'm going to dress my 5-year-old daughter up like a Times Square hooker from 1985 so we can hopefully win a trophy. I don't really understand how you don't see the hypocrisy of that. Is it because men dressing up as women is bothersome? And that's unnatural, but a child being judged solely on their looks isn't? I don't know. But I wish there was some consistency there. Also, there's new hours. This is a very local story. New hours at Alki Beach. Kevin, did you go to Alki Beach? Is that a big
thing?
It's
awesome, man.
Seattle?
Love it.
Yeah?
It's beautiful.
Did you go there and have bonfires and things like that?
Not typically. I don't go there that often, but there are a lot of bonfires there.
So they've shortened the hours during the summer of 2023. During the summer months, it's going to be 4 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. and May 29th to September 4th. So they're going to go to 11:30 p.m. after September 5th. So once the weather's cold, I guess you can go there a little bit later. I don't know. I saw this story and I was like, whatever. It's just going to mean law-abiding people will stay away and people who don't care will still go. That's what's going to happen. I mean, that's what happens with everything. And because we don't have a police force that is able or capable or maybe sometimes willing to enforce a lot of the laws, nothing's going to change because that's exactly what happened last year. The people who live around there complained. So they shortened the hours. And the people who live around there still complained that there were people on the beach at all hours of the night.
I'm more of a Golden Gardens kind of place. Golden Gardens Park?
Yeah.
I'm more of a Golden Gardens guy.
They're doing
guy.
The same thing at Golden Gardens. Yeah, they're doing the same thing there, too.
Aw.
Yeah, sorry. But I do have this question about it. They have a restriction on bonfire dates. You can start bonfires, I believe, it's up to time in later May and during the summer. You can have bonfires. So during fire season, you can have bonfires on the beach. But during regular season or non-fire season, you can't. Does that make any sense? During wildfire season, you can have something that might contribute to wildfires on the beach. But during non-wildfire season, no, you can't do that. Also, wouldn't it make more sense to be able to have bonfires when it's cold? I don't understand. A lot of these things are not me being rhetorical. A lot of them are just me being stupid. And I apologize for that.
Agreed.
So the head of OpenAI / ChatGPT went before Congress today and beg them to please regulate him and his industry, which brings us to a fascinating episode of Finally, The Humans Are Dead. Rule the world. The humans are dead. The humans are dead. We use poisonous gases and we poison masses. So, the head of OpenAI, the people who made ChatGPT, went before Congress today and told them that government intervention will be critical to mitigate the risk of increasingly powerful AI systems. This is Sam Altman, which, by the way, there's a guy who's running the biggest, scariest AI system in the country or the world, really. And his name is Sam Altman? Okay, I'm not going to... I'll let you make your own jokes there. That's fine. He says, as this technology advances, we understand that people are anxious about how it could change the way we live. And we are too. Altman proposed the formation of a U.S. global agency that would license the most powerful AI systems and have the authority to take that license away and ensure compliance with safety standards. That Richard Blumenthal, senator from Connecticut, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee Subcommittee on Privacy, Technology, and the Law, he did this fascinating thing where he actually opened the hearing with a recorded speech, and it sounded just like him, but it was actually the voice of a clone trained on his floor speeches, and it was reciting a speech written by ChatGPT after he asked the chatbot to compose his opening remarks. Also testifying were IBM's chief privacy and trust officer, Christina Montgomery, and Gary Marcus. They said, quote, artificial intelligence will be transformative in ways we can't even imagine, with implications for American elections, jobs, and security. This is like serial killers begging the cops to stop them. This is like John Doe showing up at the precinct at 7 and screaming, detectives! With blood all over his hands. Please stop us. There's also a report that came out today that there's already a lot of jobs that are being affected by AI. And it's not necessary. ChatGPT gets all of the concern and headlines, but actually it's the voice cloning stuff and imaging stuff that's really displacing people. Companies are laying people off in creative fields like audiobooks now, where one audiobook company apparently has laid off 80% of their workforce and switched over to AI, which is, first of all, unethical because AI is, it's not like it just makes these voices up out of thin air. It's based on real people's voices. So it's stealing, it's theft, and then remixing it. This is no different than some, you know, rap artist sampling somebody's work and then not giving them credit. That's all the AI voice cloning is. If you're making money off of our voices, then we should at least get, you know, writing credits or whatever the equivalent of that is. But the other thing that's disturbing about the audiobook component is this. Only famous people will get to narrate books. Because that's what they do now. Either you'll be a voice clone or, you know, we'll have Seth Rogen and, I don't know, James Franco get together to narrate different parts of your book and play different characters. That's how we sell audiobooks now. Don't have the author narrate it necessarily, but we'll have Hollywood actors come in and do it. In more disturbing AI news, Microsoft say that they've developed a new artificial intelligence system that they believe shows sparks of artificial general intelligence. Now, if you don't know what the difference is this. Artificial intelligence is the BS algorithm buzzword that we've been applying to AI systems now, like ChatGPT, where it's just language learning models. They don't really do anything much more sophisticated than web searches and scraping the web. Microsoft is saying we have artificial general intelligence, which is something that can think for itself. It's basically something that they think might someday become self-aware.
Cool.
Yeah, so Skynet. They've made Skynet.
Can we not?
I would appreciate it. They said it was able to solve a puzzle that required an intuitive understanding of the physical world. So, you know, when you go to certain websites and it makes you, it's like, prove you're not a robot. You have to like that's a bus and that's another bus and that's a bus, right? Well, apparently this thing can do that. So those tests are useless.
Which I
cannot. It was also able to write a mathematical proof, draw a unicorn, and write a letter in the voice of Mahatma Gandhi.
Wow.
Yeah. So other people believe that this is kind of BS and they're just making their claims, like they're hyperbolizing and making it seem bigger than it actually is. But they're insisting, no, we're almost there. We are almost there. Finally, in this terrifying segment, according to a U.S.-Brazilian researcher, Ben Gortzel, who's a leading AI guru, AI could replace 80% of jobs in the next few years. So he's asked the question, like, yeah, what do you think the threat is from AI? And he said, yeah, you could probably make 80% of jobs obsolete that people do, even before we have artificial general intelligence, even before we get to the next step. He said, you know, not with ChatGPT, but, you know, with something a little more sophisticated than that. He says, quote, I don't think it's a threat. I think it's a benefit. People can find better things to do with their life than working for a living. Pretty much every job involving paperwork should be automatable, which I don't think is a word. The problem I see is the interim period where AIs are obsoleting one human job after another. I don't know how to solve all those social issues. Okay, so he says it's great. It'll be great for mankind. That it'll be awesome for us when the AI is eliminating our jobs. Well, not at first. At first, we'll be broke and miserable and living on the streets because we won't have jobs. But eventually, when everybody is out of a job, it'll be great. This is where things get either terrifying or maybe kind of cool. Because you go to any rich neighborhood, you see there's no shops, no businesses, just rich people with giant mansions and gated drives and landscapers and workers who work for them. Which means that when AI eliminates all of our jobs, the only jobs for you and your kids will be manual labor for people who were business owners before all this started. But what could happen is that we see this coming and Congress, our government, who for some reason could never be replaced by AI, they get together and they go, okay, we need to make sure that when people are laid off, they have not just a safety net, but a guarantee that they're not going to be homeless, their children are going to starve, and they're going to be able to, you know, do that thing that we like people to do, live, do that.
You sound like a communist.
Well, that's what it's going to lead to. Well, I'm not even, I mean, I'm not a communist, but I don't see any other result for AI other than this. Either you have super capitalism where everybody is broke except for the few business owners who are running everything through AI and robots.
Big capitalism.
Or you go, okay, we have that. Those people have all the money, but we're going to take money from them and distribute it evenly to people so that they have enough money to live. But that's where we're going. Either we're all going to be starving in the streets, or the government will actually get its head out of its butt and do something about this impending danger.
Why would they do that?
Or third option.
Ooh.
All of this is just as overblown as self-driving cars were like 10 years ago.
Once again, without emotion, the humans are dead, 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 dead.
I'm just saying.
Hey, sexy mama.
Aren't you all human?
You know, I worry about this stuff too, but it's also looking into the future has been proven to be pretty fruitless. We all assumed we'd have self-driving cars by now, and we just don't. I mean, I kind of have a self-driving car. I got to tell you, it's a piece of crap. It doesn't work very well. It's great in traffic jams. If you need to move like 10 feet at a time, it's great. Other than that, pretty useless. It's Chironites. Coming up, you know what? We're going to lighten things up. We're going to do some entertainment news. Why was Billy Corgan upset that Kurt Cobain died? Yeah, news from almost 30 years ago. That's next on Chironites.
Northwest News.
Well, that's ominous. I'm assuming there's a song here. I'm just going to wait for it.
No song.
It
yeah, it's a song.
It's Cairo Nights. How you guys doing? It's Jonathan. We're happy Tuesday. Yeah.
It's not just any song. It's not just any song. It's by a song by a song? Seattle band, dude.
What song was it?
I was playing it because we're going to be talking about, you know, Kurt Cobain and whatnot, but I was playing it because it's from a band from that era. They're called Undertow. Awesome hardcore band from here in Seattle that's reuniting this summer.
All right. Good for them. I actually I'm not familiar with that band.
Great band.
They sounded pretty badass. All right. So we're going to do some entertainment news. And that's only because I scared myself talking about how the robots are going to take over the world and AI is coming for our jobs and 80% of people are going to be laid off in the next couple of years, according to an AI guru. So let's go back to the past and just remember what the 90s were like. Billy Corgan says that he cried when Kurt Cobain passed away because he, quote, lost his greatest opponent. So I don't know if you know this, but Billy's a very competitive guy. He wanted the Smashing Pumpkins to be the best band in the world, and specifically him, because if you know anything about the Smashing Pumpkins, it was mostly just him and Jimmy Chamberlain when it came to the recording of stuff, and then when they went out on tour, then he'd use the other people, Darcy and James Iha. But he said he only wanted them to be the best if they could beat the best. He said, quote, I don't want to win the championship because it's just me and a bunch of jabronis. So Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, those were just a bunch of jabronis. He adds, quote, Kurt was the most talented guy of our generation. Kurt had so much talent, it's like frightening. It was like a John Lennon level of talent where you're like, how can you have all of this talent? That's a direct quote from lyricist and wordsmith poet Billy Corgan. He said, but Kurt's not here, sadly. So I looked around and I was like, all right, well, I could beat the rest of them for sure. Okay, here's the thing, Kevin. I love the Smashing Pumpkins. I really do. I love Gish, Siamese Dream, Melancholy, The Infinite Sadness. Those are all great albums. But
Adore was pretty good.
Adore is even pretty good. And I like that he was always trying to do new things. Like, he was always pushing himself and his band to be more creative and go in different directions artistically and everything like that. But do you think that he beat the rest of the bands? Because let's just rank the top bands of the 90s besides Nirvana, okay? And I know there's lots of people who wouldn't put Nirvana first, but that's not the point of this exercise. The point is, let's rank all the bands besides Nirvana. So Pearl Jam. Is Pearl Jam better than Smashing Pumpkins?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably get punched in the face in Seattle if I said no. So, yeah, I would say Pearl Jam for sure.
No, they definitely speak the truth.
I would say Alice in Chains, much better. I would say Soundgarden, much better.
I would say Soundgarden.
Better.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Mudhoney. I wouldn't say Mudhoney's necessarily better than the Smashing Pumpkins as far as songwriting is concerned, but, you know, and Alice in Chains is kind of like this too. Without those bands, I don't think we would have had alternative music the way we did.
I would say Quicksand and Seaweed are so much better than Smashing Pumpkins.
Those are my two favorite elements in water-based elements.
Quicksand and Seaweed? Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you could, I mean, if you want to go like crazy with it, I could say like Sunny Day Real Estate was a better 90s band than the Smashing Pumpkins because they influenced so many other bands that came after them. I mean, I was not a fan of the emo movement necessarily, but Sunny Day Real Estate kind of started that whole thing. So I don't know. I just don't. I like Billy Corgan a lot, and I like the Smashing Pumpkins a lot, but I can't sit here and say, oh, they were the best band of the 90s, hands down, obviously. I wouldn't even... Nirvana's my favorite band, but I wouldn't say that it's obviously universally accepted that Nirvana was the best band of the 90s. Because Hootie and the Blowfish are out there. I mean, come on.
Dinosaur Jr.
Okay, you said a real band. I said Hootie and the Blowfish.
Stone Temple Pilots,
yeah.
Faith No More. Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I'm not dismissing California. See, but I don't consider those 90s bands. I consider those, I mean, Chili Peppers were putting out albums in the 80s. I mean, technically so was Nirvana. I don't know. I don't know that I would consider them like 90s bands, even though that's when they got big. I don't know. Next story in entertainment is this. Christopher Lloyd, might know him as Doc Brown from Back to the Future, says that he's up for a fourth Back to the Future film. He says, quote, I would love to do a sequel. If somebody has a brilliant idea that would justify a fourth film, it might just happen. He also thinks Michael J. Fox could do it too. He says, quote, there was a certain ease between us. I didn't have to struggle to get there with Michael. There was never any conflict. It just fit. and it never stopped. I feel like we could go and do it again after all these years and not have to think about the relationship between Marty and Doc. I'm going to say this to Christopher Lloyd, and I know he's a big fan of the show, so I'm just going to say this to him right now. Please don't do this. Please don't push for a fourth Back to the Future film. Please don't do that to us.
I saw the preview for that new Indiana Jones, and I was like, is that necessary?
I'm just saying. That's where I'm at with this. Like, on the same level. Because never mind the medical condition of Michael J. Fox. I mean, there's a new documentary on him that you should watch called Still. It's amazing. But why do we have to keep revisiting and rebooting things? You know, did Van Gogh paint Starry Night over and over again? No. You go, here's a sequel to Starry Night. Did the Beatles rewrite Hey Jude over and over again? No. They were like, that's it. That's a great song. We're done.
Greatest hits.
I don't know why it's like that with movies and TV shows, though. Like, we had a great idea once. Let's keep doing it. Let's just keep doing it. By the way, he's right when he was talking about there being, like, an ease between him and Michael J. Fox. Few people know this, and I'm not making this up. Eric Stoltz was the original Marty McFly, and you can see even, like, they shot, like, most of the film with Eric Stoltz playing Marty McFly, but he was apparently, like, not great. He's a great actor, but him and Christopher Lloyd didn't get along too great, or their chemistry was off or whatever. So then they brought in Michael J. Fox, and he was amazing.
I want to see C. Thomas Howell as his character.
As Marty McFly?
Yeah.
Or as Doc Brown?
As Marty McFly. C. Thomas Howell as Marty McFly.
Maybe if you did it as, like, animation or something. I don't know. I just don't need it. I don't need it. It's Chiron Knights. Chiron Knights, how you doing? Happy Tuesday, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Jonathan Weir. Happy to be with you. You know, we were talking about Billy Corgan saying that he was really sad when Kurt Cobain died. Really? Oh, wow. That's crazy. I didn't know that was so devastating emotionally for so many people. But he said he was sad because, that was his, like, main competition, his main rival, which I don't think anybody thought of it like that. That'd be like, I don't know, in the world of the NBA or something, if somebody's like, man, when LeBron retires, that sucks because he's my main rival. By the way, my name is, I don't know, Jason Tatum. And I love Jason Tatum, but he's not. Yeah, that's my main rival. That's not the same thing. I'm Jaylen Brown. It's not the same thing. But we were talking off air, Kevin, you and I, about double albums. Because Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness by the Smashing Pumpkins was a double album. And it's good, but it didn't need to be a double album. Right?
Yeah, it could have been probably an EP.
And I was genuinely just racking my brain trying to think of... Yeah, it could have been an EP, so 8 songs. I was trying to think of a good double album. And I really can't. It's really tough. Like, because the White Album is the Beatles' only double album, and it has Honey Pie, which is terrible, and Goodnight, Goodnight, which is also awful, and Revolution Number 9. Like, every Beatle had their... I think George is the only one that came out unscathed from that. And the Beatles had 4 songwriters in the band and still couldn't pull off a double album. Vitalogy.
I just pulled up the greatest ones of all time.
Okay, what are they?
We got, number 10, Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, Infinite Sadness, The Clash, okay. London.
I'm already losing faith in this list.
Yeah, it's Rolling Stone. The Clash, London Calling. We got Allman Brothers Band at Fillmore East, The Who, Quadrophenia, Bob Dylan.
Wait, hold on a second. You can't include a live album as a double album. Of course that's going to be good because it's basically a band just playing hits.
Bob Dylan, Blonde on Blonde, Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti, Bruce Springsteen, The River. Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street, Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Okay.
And the Beatles, The White Album.
Okay, The White Album should be on there, honestly. It's not even as good as London Calling.
Started to butt in like that, though.
What'd you say?
Said, sorry I had to butt in with that top 10.
Well, no, we were discussing it. You were contributing.
Yeah.
This time, Kevin. Yeah. But yeah, maybe Blonde on Blonde. I do like that album a lot.
But Outkast, Speaker Box, The Love Below.
In The Love Below. That was a good concept album, but that I don't know if that counts as a double album. It was just those two guys making their own album and then releasing it together. But then you could say the same thing about the Beatles. I don't know. Hey, you know, this is the craziest story that I think I've seen in the Seattle area over the last couple of days. A story about the minivan in, I'm so sorry that I don't know how to pronounce this, Hoquiam?
Hoquiam.
Hoquiam. I thought that's what it was, and I was like, no, it can't be that obvious. It has to be more confusing. I've lived in Massachusetts too long. We call a city that is spelled Worcester, Worcester. So my apologies.
Worcester.
Hoquiam, where a woman left her minivan idling with the air conditioning on because it was hot on Monday morning, and somebody jumped in it and drove off. She had her children sleeping in it. Two witnesses saw the van at a convenience store on Boone Street in Aberdeen and called 911. And the two children were inside the van, and they were not hurt. The suspect was standing near the van and ran away as soon as the officers arrived at the scene. Now, here's what I would like to believe happened, is that guy took the van and did not know that there were children in the back and just didn't know what to do, right? Because the children weren't hurt. He didn't do anything untoward, so far as we can tell, to the children. He wasn't planning on kidnapping them and holding them for ransom. I would like to believe that there was some movie where that happened from the 70s. Text line, what movie was that? 888-973-5476. 888-973-CHIRO. Where like a little girl falls asleep in the back and there's like these two robbers, bank robbers, take the car and she's in the back. And then they end up like adopting her because she's so delightful and precocious. But I would like to believe it was that kind of situation and not like some horrible person trying to kidnap children. Because it's funnier to me to think that he's like, ha, stole this van. And then he's like, they wake up in the back like, what's going on? I'm just saying, as far as situations ending as well as they can, that ended as well as it possibly could. That ended as well as it possibly could. Are you okay, Kevin, with the Space Needle being repainted?
That's a good question. Like, what color?
They're going back to astronaut white. I liked the gold, or the orange galaxy gold, or whatever they were calling it. I like the color it was. White is just so plain and basic and ratchet.
Plain, you know? And basic and ratchet. That's funny.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, maybe it pops a little bit better, and that's the color we're used to it being, but I like the orange. It looked like a dreamsicle.
Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah, it was adorable.
I would like it to be purple.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? Purple or pink.
That'd be cool.
Rainbow. Let's put a big rainbow on it.
That'd be flare-tastic.
That would show them.
Totally.
That would show all of them.
Like, yeah. A rainbow in the dark. See that
exactly
callback?
Right. Do it for Ronnie James Dio.
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe we could just take all the gum off of the gum wall and put it on top of the Space Needle. And it can be whatever color that is. Color of gingivitis.
When you come back to Seattle, are you going to visit the gum wall?
I've been at the gum wall.
Have you put gum on the gum wall?
I did not, because I didn't have gum on me. So maybe I need to go back to do that.
Or you could take a piece off the gum wall.
I would prefer not
chew to. That.
I don't think there's many things in life that would make me more disgusted.
You have health insurance.
Honestly. My skin is crawling right now. Thinking about it. Next at Horror Nights, we're going to talk about how cancel culture is coming for Miller Lite. That's just one of several stories in the Doom Scroll. Association.